Good afternoon and welcome to Teachers Paid, to Home Run with the Helmet and Dwight.
Helmut. You know, one day, Helmut, if those particular most important stakeholders of our listening demographic realize that you did not wish them on one of these particular special days in future, they just might have a petition, literally a petition in front of our studio, because Helmut did not wish them.
Well, I think I'm...
They knew why Helmut was wishing them.
Look, if they have not figured that part out, I'm worried about our education system.
Well, you never know.
Okay, when you put it that way.
You never know. These days I've been singing a lot at home. You never know. So
okay,
yeah.
Well, speaking of singing, what's it about shower and making someone think they're Justin Bieber? You know, I've come to learn that...
participating in Namibian Idol.
I know, right? It's like, as soon as you get in the shower and you hold a brush, for some reason
the brush, the soap, the washing cloth, the shampoo bottle, sometimes the towel. I don't know what the towel did to you, but the towel just, you know, feels like being the one man, one woman audience that it's...
Oh yeah, it's the only audience in there. Thank God, for the sake of your sanity.
Yeah.
Let the towel be the only audience. Well, now that we have just finished ruining your Friday by putting some disturbing pictures in there.
Guys, there's nothing we can do about your thoughts. Please. That is not Eagle FM's responsibility.
Yeah, no Helmut or Dwight.
Yes, no Home Run responsibility.
Oh, hang on a second. Oh, wait. did you read this story of this lady? Is it Cambodia somewhere somewhere in Asia, who is facing prosecution because she allegedly, you know, lured monk guys to get some action, and then the guys were kicked out of the profession. Now, the reason behind is that, she only did that for the sake of blackmailing them. And she allegedly made a lot of money from it. And then, you know, until the whole thing came out, then everyone was like, yeah, you know what, forgive us, you know. Well, it's like, hang on a second, guys. Well, just. I'll keep the rest for my stage show.
Okay. Yeah. So you need to keep that for Monday's session.
No, not even Monday. For the sake of my salary. Yeah, just stage. Yeah.
Oh, okay. When is the stage? Today?
No, not today. Here, thank God, because, this weekend I just want to sleep. Yeah.
Great stuff.
I just want to sleep. Alone. Thank you very much. But, if there's a tender, I'm not saying I'm not going to apply, but... Okay, it's home run time.
We're supposed to be safe for driving purposes and drive time sessions, Helmut.
Oh, come on.
We're not supposed to lead people to temptations that they did not apply for.
Well, it's Friday, guys. It's Friday and it's payday for some. It's broke day for others. And if you are one of those in the broke category, don't worry. You are not alone. JS Net Alien.
No, you said literally the opposite of it.
So,
JS Nee Alien Nee.
Oh, okay. JS what now?
JS Nee Alien Nee. Because you literally went and said the opposite of what you said. You first said you are not alone, and then you went like, JS Net Alien. Net means you are just alone.
Wait, net is not, doesn't mean not?
Yes.
Oh, man.
Net and not.
I nailed.
No, I would.
Okay, you know what Dwight said in Afrikaans? This Friday is not going as
Look, guys, I didn't give Helmut anything. Please. We were supposed to just move on from the wishing of... do you know what those particular colleagues that you love wishing on these special days every month, they receive today? Supposedly they could knock off at 2:30 today.
Why?
I don't know.
Huh.
There's no significant reason as for that, but yeah, you know.
Wow. Must be fascinating.
Wonderful stuff, man.
Really wonderful.
Makes you want to become a teacher again, eh?
Yeah, no. No.
Not even for the early knockoff days.
Oh, no, I'll explain. you know, after Comrade.
Okay.
Yeah. There's something my principal said to me and something I witnessed. I was like, you know what? I think I'm going to go back to school. Thank you very much. So, speaking of going back, let's go back to home run away from that, humor starter of today's home run. And for those of you that just tuned in, you're listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. And we're here as usual until the hour of six. And we are your drive time show. If you are new, welcome to the club. And from here until six, we have a topic for you as usual. And today is one particular event that took place in Equatorial Guinea, the only African country that has Spanish as an official language.
Mm-mm. You said there were three.
There were three.
Mention all three languages that it has.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, like, Spanish in particular is the only one that uses Spanish as an official language.
Okay, the first lady and the president came and spoke in Spanish, which threw our preparation for the day almost into the bathtub with the bath water, which mm-hmm. usually goes outside because you have to throw the bath water out.
It spills over.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the country itself has, three official languages. That's French, Portuguese, and Spanish.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like Namibia having three official languages, English, German, and Afrikaans.
No, Helmut, we don't just have three languages.
No.
You were supposed to say it's like us having all 14 languages as official languages.
Man, our offices would be disastrous.
But I get your point.
Yeah, well, I was at the ATM this other day. I tried, I tried withdrawing money to one of the, you know, ATM, in Rukwangari. I felt like the ATM was lying to me. I was like, nah, ain't no way. And I switched to English. I mean, some of these things you need to get used to because.
Yeah.
But what? Well, it's like,
I think I know which bank you're talking about.
Yeah, oh, I know.
It's the only one that gives you multiple options for when you did not prepare for multiple options at the ATM.
Rukwangari. Pressing Rukwangari. You know that part that says proceed. Yeah. All of a sudden I'm seeing Twikira. I'm like, aye.
what does it mean?
It literally means proceed.
Okay, no, but the one that you saw, what did it tell you in your mind?
And I was like,
Spelling wise or is it pronunciation wise?
No, pronunciation and spelling, everything is fine. It's just, it's something that I think, speaking for me, it's something that I think I've gotten used to, like in all professional settings.
Mm.
It's just English all the way.
Mm.
So when I find myself in more like, a professional interaction, whether it's with a person or with a machine, in this case, an ATM,
mm.
English is the first thing to pop up.
Okay, so which is one of the reasons as to why we had that discussion the other day. Remember the one about the indigenous language formulation or the mother tongue language preservation discussion in Namibia?
Yeah.
It's because of literally that's how we've been, what do they call that word? Conditioned.
Yeah, exactly. That's the right word. It's a conditioning.
It's a conditioning. Yeah. And the unfortunate thing is, you can be as wonderful in English, but the moment you have to switch over to your mother tongue and now you're asked, please read a text or at a church or a funeral setting or at a wedding setting and now you're there, and you're forgetting and slipping over your letters and pronouncing, and people are like, did you really forget your mother language? How could you? And you're like, dude, come on, I have to speak in English every day. For profession, every day.
Are you kidding me? Even at home, every time I speak my language, my roommate goes like, that's your language? My first question, the question I always ask them is, do I look English? Because.
Well, that's the other thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I think, you're right. Conditioning is the right word to use. It's like, all interactions, English is the first thing to come up.
Mm.
At least in a way that I'm interpreting my environment on a daily basis. So, we started off from from Equatorial Guinea, again, not to be confused with Papua New Guinea, Guinea-Conakry, and Guinea-Bissau. Papua New Guinea, way the side of Australia, Guinea-Conakry and Guinea-Bissau.
You said there were three Guineas in Africa.
Yeah, there are three.
Which technically means there are four Guineas in the world.
Yeah.
So we're not talking about PNG, which is on that side of Australia.
No.
It's obviously... But this is equatorial.
This is Equatoria.
And its capital is Malabo.
Yeah.
Guys, geography is fascinating.
I know.
However, where are the other two Guineas?
Their side of Ghana.
Ghana and Gambia. You said one is
that side.
One is next to Gambia, the other one is close to Ghana.
They are neighbors. I know they're neighbors.
Yes.
That's one confusing thing about it. Which is why they're first,
And then somewhere there's Liberia.
Which
does not have a newspaper. No, a national radio.
Leave Liberia out of this.
No, really?
Huh?
Yeah, really? Do they have a national airline. And it's Africa's most singular, most oldest and independent nation.
You mean the country,
which was constituted by the Americans and was former slaves, yes.
Yeah, the one with the president that speaks very interesting English, according to...
All Trump's. Of them have English names. Oh. Charles Taylor, the most, most famous...
Questionable.
The questionability is based upon the notoriety, said aka famousness, or if you want to flip it the other side, infamous.
It also makes sense.
What do they call that? Association to a dark chapter of Liberia's civil war, which happened in the 80s.
Of these guys.
That neighborhood of Africa, and that's why you sometimes look at Southern Africa and you go like, if our guys in Southern Africa were sticking to peaceful liberation movements in many cases.
No.
Coexistence, peaceful coexistence. What happened in those other parts of Africa?
I think for the most part, it's a power vacuum thing. Every time there's a dictator, they, to some degree, tends to using their own very diabolical way of controlling. They keep the country in one place in terms of power.
Like the other Guinea who got, what's that Guinea? The guy whose son was arrested in France, the guy that I keep referencing.
Oh, hang on a second. That was Equatorial Guinea. The same Guinea.
These two people that were speaking Spanish the other day.
Yeah.
Husband and wife.
Equatorial Guinea.
Who was also couped by his cousin.
Equatorial Guinea.
His cousin being the head of the army.
Still Equatorial Guinea.
Still Equatorial, eh?
Yep.
And he did the same thing to an uncle of his when he took power.
Equatorial Guinea. You know that guy that almost finished the wives of every parliamentarian?
That country.
Equatorial Guinea is awesome, guys. Let's move there. But people from this country are not going to like this show.
If they knew what you and I were talking about. If they knew. Well, first and foremost, they might write a formal letter to our president, and our president would then, for the first time, should be listening in our shows going like, so what are these two guys talking about?
Okay. Hang on a second. The guy that went viral, for saying, come and help, there's this president that went viral. That's the president of Gabon, not Equatorial Guinea. That's the president of Gabon, the one who was screwed by the cousin or some kind of close relative.
Is it Gabon?
Yeah, that must be Gabon. And they are neighbors, those two, by the way. And they just right next to, right next to them, just just a couple of hundred, if not a thousand or 2 kilometers offshore of Gabon, you have your favorite, your favorite island nation, Sao Tome and Principe.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm looking up coups that happened after COVID.
Yeah.
And the brief history obviously speaks of, and I mean, they even have a lovely infographic. You've got to love infographics. Dear listeners, we actually started off on a different tangent for today's particular show, but it helps us to set the scene because the AU mid-year coordination meeting of heads of state in Equatorial Guinea, the capital Malabo, is based upon the integration of the continent. Now, at the heart of this particular subject matter is one that indicates a problematic scenario that we still have to overcome. Okay, so Helmut, here is the scenario. So It's Burkina Faso, it's Mali, it's Guinea-Bissau, it's Guinea-Conakry, the other Guinea that you're talking about. Yeah, they're literally right next to each other. Right next to each other and next to Gambia.
Then you have Liberia.
Yeah.
It's a neighbor to Sierra Leone and Guinea-Conakry.
Yeah.
Then it's
this little neighborhood here at the back head, you know, the back of the head of the continent.
African continent, yeah.
Then there's Niger. Then there's Chad. Then there's Sudan, our best buddy Sudan, for some reason.
So, yeah, you have Ivory Coast and then Ghana, Togo, and you have Benin.
Yeah. And Sao Tome and Principe. No, but I'm looking at a specific study that comes through from the platform Frontiers, and they looked at everything up until 2022 even. So they were in that space from 2020 to 2022.
Yeah.
And they obviously cite the geographic distribution of coup attempts, total by country. So total in... So the totals are, if it was beige, it's zero. Orange, it's one. Red, it's two. Guess who has had two coups? Sudan, Mali, Burkina Faso, and the other guys were all just 1-1-1 leading up from there.
How many did Gabon have?
Okay, they don't cite Gabon here because Gabon would have been highlighted. As I said, it would have been up to 2022.
Yeah.
But as I remember, all of this actually began in 20. Some of these guys were in 2022. These particular, Central African Republic is also missing from this particular discussion. So is the, who else is the other country? So is, yeah, it's no, it's, yeah, it's just that whole neighborhood, literally the Sahel neighborhood of everything. Yeah. So, yeah. We start off obviously on an interesting side of things, dear listeners, because you've got to understand your continent a lot more and a lot better than trying to understand other peoples, other parts of the world. Okay, Helmut and I, we're slightly a little bit of an exception because we've got to speak about the whole world on the home run and which impacts you and myself on a daily basis. So, yeah.
I think we started off at a place that, lays the foundation of for the problem that we have with the African continent, and that is leadership. Leadership is more of a general, the most general way to put it would be governance. And that's because I think the fact that you have a group of countries in close proximity with each other geographical wise, you'd think that they will have a lot of positive influence towards each other. But then from the look of things, it has not always proved proven that way.
Mm.
And the easiest example to see this before one can easily get a picture of what's taking place in Africa in terms of difference in point of view on how to more like govern, even this is the problem that you see even between African leaders. The easiest example would be what the Westerns often refer to as Middle Eastern countries, although for those of us that are in the further south, I think direction wise it would be more like Middle North, because they are just far, they are northwards from us, not, Middle East for us would be, maybe that would be Australia.
Yeah.
So when you look in, at a group of countries that are mostly known as the Arab, world, for example, you have obviously those ones, you have a lot of countries in this part that have a thriving economies and they're doing pretty well. And also in the very same group, in the same group of landmass, you have countries that have always been mired by war. And these wars can be attributed to, from anything, from external interference to just a flat out power struggle for, more like a struggle for power, in terms of, internal dispute.
Mm.
And that, I think, it's where Africa finds itself. You have, African countries that, they're not perfect, but they have, this more of a smooth transition of power. You know what? You know, at the end of your presidential term, you know, you have a lot of African leaders that that say, you know what, my term is over. You know, I'll just hand over to the next, to, you know, to the next person.
Yeah.
And one of the best, you know, example of this would be, you see this in Zambia, you see this in Namibia, you see this in Botswana. You see this in Botswana, you see this, you know, in South Africa. I think Botswana is somewhat of a special, Botswana and Zambia for me are more of a special case because these are the only two countries, at least that I know of, in the SADC region, whose election was won by a different political party.
Okay, so that, yeah. Which means literally there was like a change in political leadership.
And there was no squabble of civil war and stuff like that.
Plus, you also see a discussion in terms of the maintenance of stability.
Yeah.
Because one of the biggest key things, if you remember back to that discussion you and I had regarding the climate change, UN climate change discussion, the workshop that I attended, the virtual one, where we sat here talking about, you know, the guy from Somalia that heard only the previous week about the SDGs for the first time in his life.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, what's happening in that country if he doesn't know what the SDGs are? I'm not taking any way, nor am I making fun of his particular exposure, but it sometimes also highlights in terms of what is communicated to the rest of the country. Now, this particular subject matter that we've got here today is one based upon a scenario of, yes, political stability is one thing, like you cited. Political stability is one thing because political stability allows for other facets of everyday life in a country to continue, you know, sort of like unhindered, you know, allow it to live, thrive, and thus, you know, continue to see if it can grow or not and generate benefits from it, like tax collection, revenue collection, and all those things. The very peculiar scenario here was, Helmut, if we take a look at this mid-year coordination meeting, the only two SADC people that I saw in that video that almost threw our planning for the day off. Reason, dear listeners, I'll explain, is because the announcer walks up in the video of the AU, and he speaks English. So now I'm waiting. Okay, let's go.
Yeah, let's find out.
And then the first lady of Equatorial Guinea walks up, the madam, and she starts speaking Spanish. I'm like, okay, understandable. She's obviously the first lady of the host country.
Mm-hmm.
Then the AU executive guy, that came after her and started speaking French. And I was like, hey, what's going on? Because he's in charge of he's a head of state, but he's an executive of the economic wing of the AU. And then the president of the host country comes back. That's now the husband of the first lady that spoke.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes and throws his speech in Spanish. I was like, nah, man, I'm already 30 minutes in and I've got no English going here for me. And then
the president of Angola shows up.
No, and then the AU chair, he's the president, Lorenzo.
Yeah.
Lorenzo shows up and I'm like, this guy's going to keep it to Portuguese and literally
straight into Portuguese.
I was like, what are these guys saying? What am I listening here to? However, Helmut and I, we luckily found the particular declaration of the previous year, 2024. And if you go, before you go and throw, you know, sort of like any forms of mud at us, that declaration is a report status of what these guys had to report to this week or this past week.
Yeah.
So it technically means that the declaration for 2025 has to be, they have to check it over and ensure, you know, what is to be agreed upon and the likes. Why? Because the Ghanaian president, occupied one of the particular strategic positions.
The previous.
Yeah. The previous Ghanaian president. That's now Nana
Akufo-Addo.
Is it Akufo-Addo or Addo Akufo? Akufo-Addo. Okay. Let me go with yours. Nana Akufo-Addo.
Yeah.
So the previous Ghanaian president occupied one of the strategic positions. There was also another guy that changed position as well, Hamoud. One of the countries also had an elections. So his role was also, what's the guy's name? I almost said Moussa Faki.
Ayuche.
The guy of Libya even had a role. But Libya is not even a formal, but anyway. Okay, anyway, let me not complain.
Valencius Maximus.
Yeah, I almost was about to complain. Now, I think it's the guy from Gwele, president of Djibouti. He wasn't there because he didn't say anything. And then there was another president, it's Tebboune. No, Tebboune was also there. So specifically, it was the Ghanaian counterpart, the Ghanaian head of state, who was the only one technically that basically changed in name or in representation. The reason why I cite this, dear listeners, is because each of these, coordination meeting technically has a strategic purpose, and the strategic purpose, if you've seen our post on our socials, the strategic purpose for this heads of state engagement, this mid-year engagement, is based upon that they've got to give feedback about the economic integration and other forms of integration of the AU. So, the Egyptian president has a task. He's supposedly a team leader. The Algerian president has a task. The Libyan president, but there are two factions in Libya, so I don't know how AU allowed that discussion to happen there. We're not going to expand into it. The Ghanaian president has a task. I also don't know how Djibouti is a country, but still, Djibouti's president has a task. There's another guy from Chad that I read here. The guy from South Sudan, oh my goodness. The guy from South Sudan also has a task. Zambia's president, Hichilema, also has a task. And all these particular guys, every year, if you occupy a specific position on the continent, a strategic position as per this status of integration, you as a head of state, you've got to provide feedback every June, July. Now, June, July, this mid-year coordination meeting is the platform by which the heads of state have to report back to the other heads of state. These heads of state that have the task, they have to report back to the other heads of state.
Yeah.
Now, what is important to note, just so that you know, dear listeners, there was a bunch of the Southern African heads of state not there. I think our president was not there, just to be sure, because it would have been
an interpreter somewhere there.
Pretty clear, because she would have announced that she would have left for that particular platform. South Africa's president was also not there, Ramaphosa. But there was a considerable presence, in terms of, just to be sure. Because last week Thursday, or in last week, our president had to receive, the visit of India's visiting Prime Minister Narendra Modi. So in that particular scenario, obviously it was technically a bit busy in a different direction for our head of state. Obviously, you know, to stay on top of affairs in terms of Namibia's particular internal affairs. Plus, she also attended, I think, the closing ceremony of the Region 5 Youth Games, the African Union Sports Council, the Region 5 Games. So there was also that particular consideration. If you're going to ask me why, because simultaneously, I gave you the reasons in terms of why. Simultaneously also, this specific event of the AU took place from the 10th to the 13th of July last week. So that you know specifically, we would have known if our president had to go there. Okay, laying down the facts, klar. We then obviously move over into what it is that these guys have to achieve, these heads of state.
Before you get there, let me also point out something. And this is, I think, it's, you know, a significance to the foundations of this discussion. This was a media coordination meeting. Which according to the pardon me, which according to the AU, you know, which according to the AU was put together from, was conceptualized or implemented in 2017 as a peripheral forum and according to Jacob Zuma, listen carefully.
What?
It was conceptualized.
You know what happened after Jacob Zuma said that, ne?
Listen carefully. Then he went on to screw up. Yeah, I know. So in 20, the media coordination meetings was conceptualized in 2017, according to the AU, as a peripheral forum for the AU and regional economic communities to align their work and coordinate the implementation of continental integral integration agenda replacing June-July summits. Yeah, so this is
So they converted this word summit July summits come and give us feedback.
And this is the feedback coming basically coming from. The Conference of Parties do things where they have to meet annually to reflect on their 2015 Paris agreements.
Yeah.
This is what we agreed. We are going to, this is what we agreed. We agreed that each and every member or each and every party to this agreement, as a country, they are going to do a lot of changes in the way that they practice their industrial activities, agricultural activities, and everything in their country, so that it's in line with the climate, climate change mitigation strategies. This is basically, Namibia would be, would take the podium and present what's being implemented in Namibia that's environmentally friendly. Like we are transitioning from this source of fuel that's not environmentally friendly as our main source of energy to this green hydrogen, for example. This June-July summits that's been converted since 2017 to a media coordination meeting. It's more or less the same because this was basically them telling regional economic communities this is the economic blocks that we have on the African continent, like ECOWAS, SADC, and East African Community and stuff. All these guys now have to meet present what's being done on a block wise and make sure that it's in line with the overall AU goal. Yeah. And, you have Agenda 2063 also in that bucket. Now, this made me ask myself one question. Mm-hmm. Since the whole idea behind the implementation of this, of these events or these summits was to hear, the economic activities that's taking place in all these, regional economic communities, aka SADC. What's happening in SADC? And if what's happening in SADC? Can we get a report from someone who is coming from SADC? And we want to find out if those activities are in line with the AU's overall goal. And when you look at it from that, that's the angle I was looking at, and I couldn't help but ask myself, does that mean there was someone from SADC who was there to represent us?
But that's where things get interesting.
Yeah.
Because we've got Lourençao of Angola, who's AU chair.
Yeah, who is chairing AU.
In that meeting engagement video, Mnangagwa was sitting in the front row. So I don't know what Mnangagwa had to contribute or say, because he's the current chair of SADC. And there's obviously also the other particular sort of like strategic roles in the bloc itself. But that's one of the reasons why I also pointed out very early, Hamoud, that our head of state did not go there. And so too, I did not see South Africa's head of state go there, because ever since last week, South Africa was busy with coordination meetings regarding the G20 summit that it's going to host later this year.
Yeah.
And that G20 summit, I think it's in October of this year. So in that particular discussion, that time frame, South Africa's priorities was also looking somewhere else. And remember, just so that people understand, the G20 engagement that South Africa have been busy with since last week into this week was based upon governmental debt, public sector debt.
Huh?
they were having conferences and discussions in South Africa from last week into this week regarding public sector debt. The G20 officials that attended the engagements in South Africa. So, which obviously should point to anyone from the AU that South Africa is first and foremost, they're trying to weather storms of uncertainty coming through from Donald Trump and his administration. His very weird, quackpot administration's particular messaging, because all the economists in the US, in Europe are saying literally they don't understand what, that their government is trying to achieve. To Richard Wolff, it looks like an empire that's busy failing. To Jeffrey Sachs, it's, when it's like a dying beast giving off its last kicks. The last kicks. What's the other guy's name? There's another guy, some of the political scientists from the world are citing things that look unclear. This is almost like punishing, and many of it was punishing close allies as opposed to sort of like rewarding them or trying to improve on relationships with them. Because now we're hearing that it seems like Trump is trying to bully Putin into some sort of you will do as I say or else discussion.
Situation, you have and, 50 days. To...
And that is making countries like Latvia, Estonia, Finland super nervous. Any country that borders onto Belarus and Russia, they are super nervous right now.
Yeah, and that's for a very good reason. And, because everyone, as you can imagine right now, is looking at Ukraine and going, that would have been us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, and they would, and all of them would like, be going like, you guys better stop this.
Yep. And I think one thing that basically, you don't have to be a political analyst to come to an understanding that any leader that is in charge of a big army, well, sending them a bullying message is not going to work.
Yeah. I mean,
that's not going to work.
The Indian government has had to host discussions once again this past week regarding the possible sanctioning of Russian oil. And Russian oil has never been sanctioned, just like the uranium.
Not just uranium. Titanium is one. When was that? In 2023, I think it was 2023. It was last year.
Yeah, 2024.
2023 or 2024.
Yeah.
The Canadian Prime Minister,
the previous guy.
The previous guy.
Trudeau.
Decided according to Reuters, ignore rank and decided to put sanctions on metals, I think, coming out of Russia, including titanium. Now, the thing is, one of the major titanium importer in Canada, is one company that makes landing gears for Boeing and Airbus. And they need the titanium that's coming out of Russia
because
and
Russia is the largest producer.
Exactly. VSMP or Avisma is the VMP, VMP, so Avisma is one, is a Russian company that has dominated, the uranium that is,
titanium.
Titanium. That is fit for aviation. Emmanuel Macron, the president of France, called the then Prime Minister of Canada and told them,
stop the idea.
I have a bunch of Airbus guys here up my behind. They want those sanctions lifted. Yeah. They were given a waiver. But the problem now is that's where you look at all these things and begin to see that they are very anti-small businesses because if you're a big company like a military contractor, for example, that's
or a key transport supplier,
you're going to be given a waiver. But if you're a small company that needs the titanium, you'll be like, well,
you'll just have to find an alternative. You'll be told, find an alternative.
The big guys couldn't find an alternative. Where am I going to get it? Again, so it becomes a bit of a problem for those big startups in countries like Canada, the US, and basically the entire Western world that needs the uranium. The big guys can access it because they've been given waivers.
Yep.
But the small guys cannot access it because we have to support Ukraine. Now, the sheer stupidity of it is,
You say they don't have a choice. They have to support Ukraine.
You have to support. Again, this takes you back to the, you know.
But if you're a mining company, you're like, nah, don't worry.
Don't worry.
You guys are safe. You guys are safe.
So this again take us to the, you know, to the damage that we witnessed in, during the 2008 financial crisis.
Mm.
If you're a big company, you know, with all the shares and all the money, we're going to bail you out because we don't have a bunch of Eastern companies to take over once this way, the big ones fail.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you're a small company, well, may the gods be with you. But the issues that led to the 2008 financial crisis, well, these small companies had little to nothing to do with it.
Mm.
It was the over gambling of the big companies that led to the chaos in the first place. So this is where you look at just the Western way of solving problem, and you can't help but go, these guys are just using every chaos as an excuse to stamp down competition that's rising. Because, it makes the environment very unfriendly for small businesses.
Some things kind of have to be together, right? Imagine, pop, but no flace. Never. Or a goal without a celebration. And friends, but no Tassenberg. Now that's just not right. Tassenberg. Best together. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not pick up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Not a very friendly environment for small businesses. But coming back to that very circling detour. The different trading blocks, as I like to call them, or as they've also been referred to as, intergovernmental organizations, blocks like, SADC, SADC, East African Community, ECOWAS, or the Sahel of, East Africa. Hang on a second. We have a lot of them here. We have, Maghreb Union, or UMA. We have COMESA, which is a common market for Eastern and Southern Africa. You have the CNSAD, Community of Sahel-Saharan States. You have the East African Community. You have ECAS, and you have ECOWAS. You have IGAD. You have SADC. All these guys are supposed to come together annually to give more of an analysis of what's taking place on their block. sorry, Hankwena, on their blocks. I'm never visiting Hankwena. Yeah.
Look, if you just said sorry, mm-hmm, and then moved on, but every time you say sorry or Hankwena, and then they all go, oh, okay. Yeah, Helmut.
I'm so into trouble. But anyway.
Ensure that you drive directly just to Divundune. You just stay.
Don't turn left.
On the left side of things. Don't turn right. Yeah, don't turn left. Just stay right.
Just stay right.
Yeah.
Nah, I'm still visiting you guys. But anyway. These media coordination meetings are supposed to be their time to shine. To sort of like present the idea of how you know the goals and activities, especially at least I'm hoping, please let it be economic activities that's taking place.
So far the things that took place, mm-hmm, you remember that the declaration of last year,
yeah,
all of it speaks towards economic, yeah, integration.
this is what SADC is doing, and it's in line with the AU.
Exactly.
This is what East African, this is what ECOWAS is doing, and it's in line with the AU.
Exactly.
This is what East African Community is doing, and it's in line with the AU, which is a good thing. At least until, but I will keep my until towards the end of the show.
Yeah. So if I share now what the media declaration hosted or has.
Yeah.
So what these guys were supposed to report back this year is based off last year's declaration, meaning the reports by heads of state and government and champions holding special portfolios, which was of that declaration of 2024, which was from the sixth meeting, because this was the seventh meeting that took place.
Yeah.
So last year, they gave the following feedbacks, the declaration of last year, meaning that Paul Kagame from Rwanda, who was the current chair back in 2024 of the Eastern Africa Standby Force, I'm very afraid what that could possibly mean, provided feedback and indicated his endorsement for the recommendations contained in that particular portfolio that he's in charge of. I'm very afraid with the word force or standby force. I don't know what that applies to. I hope it's not anything security related. Then there was the President Abdel Majid Tebboune from Algeria, the President of Algeria, who was then also the chair of the North African Regional Capability, indicated his endorsement for the recommendations contained in his report. The Egyptian president, Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, who was the chair of the Heads of State and Government Orientation Committee, HSGOC, of the African Union Development Agency, AUDA NEPAD, indicated his endorsement for the recommendations contained therein. You had the former president, because someone else won the Ghanaian election last year. Was it last year or this year, Helmut?
Ghana?
Ghana's election. It was this year, ne?
Huh.
Because we, South Africa, Nigeria was last year.
Ghana was last year, yeah.
Yeah. So Ghana was this year. Yeah, Ghana was this year.
Ghana and Botswana.
Yeah, Ghana and Botswana. Nana Addo Dankwa Akufo-Addo. Yeah, you were right, Helmut. It's Nana Akufo-Addo. The former president of Ghana. He was the AU champion on AU financial institutions, and he provided his endorsement for the recommendations that were contained in two reports. Now, his portfolio is the only portfolio alongside the president of Congo, the other Congo, not Congo Kinshasa, Congo Brazzaville, Denis Sassou Nguesso, who actually expanded on what their portfolios were meant to do. The economic one for the one of the economic elements that Nana Akufo-Addo had to look into was firstly the establishment of the AU financial institutions. So this means establishing African Union financial institutions. So we're talking about something similar to like the European Central Bank. Something similar to like the, what's the other one's name? Because we have a development bank, an AU development bank. Mm-hmm. But we've got AfriExim Bank, which is also AU owned. And then it's obviously now speaking about having other financial institutions in place to help with the economic integration. The other report that he also had to deliver was the one about scaling up interoperability for economic integration, namely using mobile money to buy and sell across Africa. Now, that specific report, I would have loved to see it. Once again, just what Helmut and I stated at the start of our discussion, it is a nightmare to go data mining on the AU website. You have to go from one website to another, from one page to another. I'm not making an excuse, guys. My head was aching. My eyes were burning. I just couldn't. From the French, Spanish, from the Spanish, French, and Portuguese, Spanish engagements, which gave me nothing, which gave us nothing. We had to go literally data mining, meaning sifting through the website, looking for any concrete documentation. We've got the one, but further concrete documentation to sort of like give us further insights into everything. And it seems like those things weren't uploaded. So.
This is from something that took place, what, like 5 days ago?
Seven. Yeah, five. No, you're right. 5 days ago, because it ended on Sunday, the 13th. Look, here's the funny thing, Amut. Most of these reports, most of these, whatever tasks were given to these, to all these heads of state, should also have been there.
Yeah.
Now, for me to go look under resources, then go look under media, then go back to that specific tag, the tab that speaks about the mid-year meeting, just to try and look for speeches. The speeches are in French, Spanish, and I'm like, oh my goodness. And then, yes, I could have translated them in ChatGPT in one of the language models, but in essence, that really doesn't help much, because the discussion that I want to see was a speech of a head of state can say one thing. The feedback that another head of state has to give to his colleagues in the AU says something else.
That's most likely going to be a summarized version of it.
But it at least would have given good insight.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, Helmut. I'm sitting with a report, which is probably also one of the discussions we're going to have. But I'm sitting with a report that came through from that EU ministerial engagement of June last month, where our Minister of International Relations attended with the European counterparts.
Yeah, the one
where she flew to Brussels, where the one that I spoke of also yesterday, where I said,
find out from a European website.
No, from the EU communications guy here in Namibia, that our minister, our deputy minister was there, and I was
this event was held in Brussels.
And I was like, did we know she was going? Because it would have been something significant. Now, from that engagement, there is a key report on developments. It's literally saying, Helmut, you remember the Mate plan that you and I keep citing?
JJ Maloney.
Yeah. About the closer integration of Africa and the EU.
Yeah.
Well, strategically, geographically, these two continents technically have a highly shared history.
Yeah.
That's why I believe specifically that much of the motivation behind the 2025 theme for the AU is literally thrown at the EU.
Tag, you are it. Hot potato. These guys are not serious.
Look, Helmut, that's what makes us unique as Africans. You know, we literally know how to, we continue getting, you know, support. Well, what do they call that thing in?
But we are very good at planning. The plan.
We're good at showing up and writing it down and designating roles, and then it's the execution, like you said.
Oh, no.
So what stems from that report literally is one that I'm not saying that it works. It's counterproductive to these efforts, but it is the current situation which you and I have continuously pointed towards in terms of each African country still has their unique international relations policy and perspective. Specifically by saying, you know what, we are looking there, but we are saying yes here to you guys. But we are still seeking economic markets and discussions in Europe and other parts of the world except Africa. Which first and foremost sort of like weakens the position of the AFCTA.
Yeah.
Because when I describe that scenario to you, you get to understand that presentation that I pulled down like 2 years back in 2021. No, not 2 years. 3 years back, 2021, 2022, by the what's the International Aviation Authority? IATA. IATA's the chief that is responsible for the Middle East and Africa zone. That guy did a presentation that I pulled down. Don't worry, I know how to use the, you know, what they call that, the deep web. Not the dark web, the deep web. The deep web is, you know, you surprisingly get positive results that you were just hitting and hoping that it sticks somewhere. And then you get the stick and you're like, hey, I actually got some gold. So he explained in that presentation, Africa's biggest problem is that Africa does not look at prioritizing trade with each other first. And this is predominantly where that currency discussion pops up again. Whose currency is the best? Well, it becomes a nightmare if you look at the CF franc in that West Africa, in that ECOWAS neighborhood. It becomes a problem if you look at...
Nigeria is not going to allow that.
It becomes a problem when you look at the Uganda shilling and the Kenya shilling, for example. Helmut, my goodness, brah. Whew. One Uganda shilling. Nah. Is valued at zero. Remember, 5 cents, ne? In Namibia, is 0.05. That's 5 cents. 0.5 is 50 cents. One Ugandan shilling, Hamut, is 0.0005.
Huh?
I'll say it again. One Uganda shilling is 0.0005. Less than a 5 cent, less than a 1 cent.
Commercial break. Turns out I'm a million.
That iconic taste of Heineken. Loved in Germany, Amsterdam, Argentina, and Namibia. That crisp and balanced taste of Heineken. Loved around the world. Enjoy that refreshing first. Only made possible by Heineken's unique 5-star credentials. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Lipura nengeno wapombwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo IGL FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijabo ili nawa. Ninge pata fanona, monika ko IGL FM, onora etatuimwe bari heari, nola natu, heari bari no heari. Ileko, derewa, nora etatu natu, bari o etatu batatu, o mafelane, IGL FM, the eye.
Twenty-nine minutes left to the hour of six. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM, and we're here until the hour of six, as always. So, please explain how I'm a millionaire in some African currencies.
Yeah. So that presentation that came through earlier this week that I attended, in terms of, you know, gathering some content for other colleagues from the Ugandan judiciary's visit. In terms of an electronic case management system,
yeah.
Which Namibia is trying to explore into in terms of fixing bottlenecks in the dispensation of justice. However, you and I, we know the problems might be more deep-rooted for Namibia's judiciary from that engagement that you and I covered last year, because we're not even at the full scope of, I mean, you can't bring an e-justice system and then hope, snap your fingers, okay, voila, things must now work. It must be now speed of... No. There are other scenarios, other deep-rooted issues, like personnel issues, infrastructure issues. But leave the judiciary discussion for one of our discussions next week. So...
It should be fun.
The Deputy Chief Justice of Uganda, Mr. Flavian Zaija, or Justice Flavian Zaija, did his presentation. It was about like 40 minutes of him just talking. And at the end of it, he illustrated the total cost for the Ugandan judiciary in terms of rolling out their electronic case court management or court or case management system. $2.5 million US dollars, how much? No, 2.6. It's 2.6 million US dollars. No, it was almost 3 million. Yeah. So it was 2.9 something million US dollars in terms of rolling out the thing, just the initial rollout of the thing. When you look at that particular discussion, obviously you Namibia would have a different scenario, but then the Ugandan deputy chief justice was continuously switching over into Kenya shilling, and he said, "No, this is billions of Kenya shilling." I was like, "What? 2.6 million US dollars is billions of Kenya shillings?" And then I did the quick you know converter, jumped onto Google foreign exchange or currency convert, and I went like, how much is one Ugandan shilling in Namibian dollars? And I found like, what? 0.0005. I was like, what? This thing is even off the digit charts in terms of money. It's off the charts. The concerns that obviously stem from this is how much is looking at, once again, I'll state the particular obvious is what the Southern African currencies have as an advantage. Meaning we already sit with a value advantage. Even the Angolan Kwanza. Even the Angolan Kwanza, the Zambian Kwacha, the Zim dollar, or it was actually, what was the other nickname they had for the gold standard? The Zig. The Zig that zags. Hey, you gotta beat up some editors in this Southern African room. The Zig that zags, but yeah. So these are the Zimbabwean gold standard that obviously tries to back up the Zim dollar, and then you've got the big daddy in the neighborhood, which is obviously the South African rand, because that is the most, it and the pula are the most valuable currencies in the Southern African bloc, because they are floated internationally. You can trade with them internationally, those two currencies. If you look at that scenario, I think, and until we see the 2025 declaration, I think the headache is pretty massive for the trying to entice goods trading with each other's currencies.
Because of what we don't have more of a, you know, even if we take, for example, to keep our respective currency, like internally Namibia keeps using, you know, to keep using the Namibian dollar, Botswana to keep using the Botswana pula.
Yeah.
And Zambia to keep using the Zambian kwacha.
But we back each other's currencies up. Do you know that? If you drive now to Botswana, let's say you go watch a Brave Warriors match after the announcements that came through from back in last week from the NFA that Namibia is now, the Brave Warriors will now play at a cheaper rate their home matches in Francistown in northern Botswana. What you will do is you'll take Namibian dollar, you'll take a whole bunch of Hendrik Witbooi's and Sam Nyoma's, and you'll go and convert them at your local bank into
Pula.
Then you will be backing up the pula just through that basic conversion exercise that I explained now. Uh-huh. Why? Because you will go tell that commercial bank you want this amount of currency. That commercial bank will go to the central bank and tell them we want this amount of stock of currency because there's so many Namibians now crossing the border into Botswana, and the central bank will buy from the Botswanan central bank.
Pula.
That is the exercise that takes place. It's the same logic that I'm applying as when the discussion about the BRICS, about de-dollarization, where the IMF and the World Bank came out and said, but last year 2024 was the highest trading volume they've seen of US dollars. And what does that mean? It meant that if two countries don't like each other's currencies, they put in an order technically to conduct the trade in US dollar, which means it boosts the value of the US dollar in the stock exchange markets of the US and in Europe and in Japan and in China.
Okay, but here's the you are basically I think it's safe to say you have said that like several times. And that's and by that I mean Africa's one of the forks in the road for Africa to that's preventing Africa from achieving its internal trade within the continent. Is the is the problem of currency?
Yeah.
Which currency to use?
Yeah.
Okay. First of all, you could just why not we could use the international trading currency. We're already doing that anyway.
Yeah. But here's the thing.
Yeah.
If you and I are neighbors.
Yeah.
Are we interested in each other's products first, or are you saying, listen, I think there is a European company that wants to buy in euro?
Yeah, I'm interested in your that's a big
Or there's an American company that's interested in buying my product in US dollar.
That's a big one.
Which is one of the processes and problems also why we as Namibia struggle with the agro-processing and agro-industrialization.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, if you, Helmut, had a potato chip manufacturing plant, ne?
Yeah.
You already buy the potatoes, let's say, from that guy that recently now, those guys they in the north that recently produced 200 tons of potatoes. Let's say you buy 10 tons of
it. Yeah, let's say I buy 10 tons from John's potato farm.
Huh?
Just go on, potato farm.
Now, you buy 10 tons of that.
Yeah.
You take it to your processing plant in Divundu. Sorry for using Divundu, Helmut. Mm-hmm. But let me show the value distribution. You take it to Divundu. You could process it now into frozen chips because you've got storage and refrigeration facilities into frozen chips, processed chips for the fast food sectors. And you are now telling there's an Angolan trade partner. There's a company that's needing this kind of product in Angola. Because there's fast food chains popping up in Angola everywhere. And you're like saying, hey, listen, I've got the product. Now, that guy would come and ask you, can you accept Kwanzaa? And you'll say, nah.
Yeah, we're going to have to...
give me in US dollar. I don't trust Kwanzaa. Which, first and foremost, negates the whole spirit of the AFCTA, CFTA.
If we're going to do it in a currency that's not African.
Yes. Oh. Because the idea of the AFCTA, CFTA, like I keep mentioning, is we engage in trade. But we try to help each other's currencies.
Okay, is that the reason behind the EU's euro currency?
Because what happened? The French franc had a different value.
Yeah.
The Deutschmark had a different value. The
British pound?
No, they were outside. They never really wanted to be in it. But they wanted access to the euro market.
To the market.
The British are weird. If you've ever looked at their history, like I've done from the Napoleonic years, from the Crimea, ever since William the Conqueror. Let me be honest. Ever since a Frenchman sailed across the English Channel, beat up the whole British aristocracy back then because they were all Saxon.
Yeah.
Because he was Frank. No, he was a Norman. He sailed over, took most of the throne from a cousin, a far off cousin of his. So it's a whole family affair.
It's a family affair.
And ever since William the Conqueror, the British have had it's like stepchildren or step siblings with each other. You are family somewhere, you are family. But you are viewing each other as step siblings. You're like, yeah, we're just family in spirit, brah. Don't worry. But
we can still kick the heck out of each other.
Yeah, if we find each other at the family, brah, we'll still throw punches. It's even worse than an Australian barbecue. So they've had that weird. I don't know why.
So they were not into it. Okay, so like you just pointed out, they wanted to have to access the market, but they didn't want to be part of the bloc that allows one to access the market.
Look, they had the special relationship like Denmark has it. Denmark is in the EU.
Yeah.
But Sweden is not in the EU. Nor is Norway in the EU.
Yeah.
But the UK, Sweden and Norway had this weird accessibility component. You don't, because look, the British, what is currently happening in the British political scene is that you've got the guys that championed for Brexit. they want to break away from the European Human Rights Commission or Human Rights Court or Court of Human Rights, ECHR is its name. Now, the Human Rights, the European Court of Human Rights or Commission of Human Rights, it permeates basic fundamental human rights to everyone in the bloc, in the European zone.
Yeah.
So the British are part of the ECHR, but they weren't fully part of the full on economic aspect in terms of saying we use your currency in our economy, because the British still felt that the British pound needs to stay sovereign. And it was almost like on par level. You'll see even in the currency valuations, the foreign exchange,
yeah,
the pound and the euro are almost, it's like 1 or 2 cents off.
Yeah.
So if you've got $1 Namibian or €1 as to Namibian dollars and £1 as to Namibian dollars, you'll see it's close. They're both 22 Namibian dollars in value for £1 or €1. Now the downside is, that long-winded explanation that I'm giving there, and we've got a short break coming up, is that they had treaties in terms of engagement with each other.
It's time to win your share of 500,000 Namibian dollars in prizes with Windhoek Beer. Find one of the 100% real quotes broadcast across Namibia on billboards, in stores, in newspapers, and on social media. Buy any Windhoek Beer, SMS the underliner code to 75050, or scan the QR code to enter on WhatsApp. So, spot a quote, grab a Windhoek Beer, and you could win. Windhoek, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. T's and C's apply.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. We have 14 minutes before the hour of 6. So
where was I? Yeah. So the issue in terms of the currency discussion, this is something that any layperson, if you know about your current affairs in terms of the economies of the continent, what I explained just now of the Eurozone and the British and the Norwegians and the Swedes is, it's a discussion of whether or not you want to keep certain particular components sovereign to your national identity. So the British obviously went and said, we want certain access privileges to the EU market. We want certain privileges as being not a full EU member, but an EU participant. It was such treaties that they had to construct, but we still want to maintain the sovereignty of our national identity through currency, having our own currency. We don't want to adopt the euro. Hence the reason why the European Central Bank sits in, I think it's Frankfurt. I think it sits in Frankfurt. Yeah. The central bank sits in Frankfurt, right opposite the German Stock Exchange. Obviously, strategically, that makes any Englishman and American nervous, because the control is not on the British Isles or in an English-speaking context. Well, also, if you understand that there's a city in the city of London.
That's
There's London City and there's the City of London.
Within the...
Yeah. And it's where the...
money laundering?
No. Yeah, the money laundering sits. For, you know, convenient terms. What's the central bank's name? The Bank of England sits in that zone. What's the rationale behind that zone? Apparently back when William the Conqueror showed up, it was the only part of the City of London that literally survived the siege that William the Conqueror actually concluded. Thus, they've been sitting with almost 1,000-year-old law that literally gives them constitution and laws unto themselves apart from the rest of the British Isles. Thus, it motivates as to why the Bank of England sits in that zone.
That's a fancy way to say we don't want to be held accountable for any questionable things we do. But, I know.
So, when you now transfer what I just explained into an African context, it would be a similar scenario, Helmut, of, let's say, SADC then proposing to these heads of state guys at a mid-year budget discussion, or not budget, sorry, a mid-year coordination meeting going like, you know, if we want a centralized African identity as an African currency, why let's use the South African rand or the Botswana pula.
Okay, wasn't it the one that said that, during a recent, is it a UN discussion where the Russian and the Chinese, more like tried to put in word for for South Africa to be a member of the.
That was the BRICS discussion of 2 weeks back.
The one in Brazil.
But it was before the summit in Brazil.
Yeah.
Okay, the summit in Brazil was literally last week.
Yeah.
It was the week before.
And,
The week before, these ministers met of the members of BRICS, and China and Russia were saying, guys, let's put South Africa as the de facto option to the Security Council representation of Africa, in terms of the reforms of the UN.
Yeah. The UN Security Council.
Guess who jumped up?
Ethiopia didn't like that.
Definitely. And Egypt.
Not surprised.
Ethiopia and Egypt did not like it.
Aren't these guys the one that are also on each other's necks over the Nile River and Ethiopia's dam?
Not just that. They're the ones most... okay, look at Egypt. Egypt has an artificial economy. I'll say it again. Everyone will tell it to you. Anyone that has two functioning brain cells around economics, Egypt has an artificial economy.
Please elaborate. I only have
Egypt gets every year $100 million in military financial aid. Military financial aid from the US. Egypt has an artificial economy. So it gets...
That's a very dangerous reliance.
Who was one of the first countries that complained about the Russia-Ukraine conflict regarding the supply of maize? It was Egypt. Egypt was one of the first, because Egypt is the doorway for, Mali, all these guys in the Sahel region. Egypt, Algeria, Tunisia, they were those doorways for the grain transport.
Suez Canal.
And the Suez Canal into East Africa. Egypt was one of the first guys complaining to the Russians, telling them, let that Ukraine shipment come out. And Putin kept telling them, but then let my grain shipment from Sochi also come out. Not Sochi. There's another Russian port there in the Black Sea. Let my shipment also come out from there. Because they know they're automatically blocked here in the Baltic Sea. Here with Norway, Sweden, Finland.
Finlandia.
Yeah. The Russians knew they're automatically blocked there. If anything had to come out there, they're automatically blockaded by NATO there. So the only natural avenue that they have is either through Vladivostok, which is closer to Japan, which is too far to send your grain shipments there, and here in the Black Sea, where the only NATO member is literally Turkey.
Yeah.
And you've got a strategic treaties with Turkey as Russia. They already have those Turkey treaties. You can negotiate with Turkey directly. They're saying, listen, let my grain exports come through. Because the Russians technically already blockaded all Ukrainian ports. They blockaded all Ukrainian ports. They also took Mariupol. Mariupol.
Yeah.
The other port city of Ukraine. So...
Pain for economic pain for Africa here then becomes, if you look at it as you put it, for on the currency, it becomes a currency problem as to whose currency to use. So it to some degree begins to resemble the issue that a lot of African countries, you know, as you can bet, there will be a lot of headbutting when it comes to, when it comes to who is going to, even if there were one or two seats available, you know, with veto power, the United Nations Security Council, who is going to be on it?
Mm.
Although the initial recommendation coming out of last year's United Nations Security Council discussion was, Africa will get two seats, one that will be rotated on by different countries on a, a period of time,
yeah,
and the other to be occupied by whoever is, by an AU, by the head of the African Union. So you have this problem of, even if something is given, who is going to take it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Who is going to be in charge of it? So then that brings up again the Continental Africa Free Trade Area. Whose currency to use? Now, I think we have an example of that. Again, we are back to the EU.
Mm.
Again, we're back to the EU. You can imagine you can imagine in the early days of the formulation of the African of the European Union,
mm,
they had that trouble. The question is, how did they navigate it to come up with the euro?
And the downside was, remember this, economically, or let me say industrially, before the euro's introduction in 2000 and 2001,
mm-hmm,
remember 2000 was the introduction of the central bank, and then 2001 was the introduction of the euro, the country currency.
Yeah.
If you look at the G7 and the G20 countries in the world, from Europe boasted the UK, France, Germany, Italy. There was another country. Don't know if it was Spain. It was, no, Greece and Spain. Yeah, Greece and Spain, because of their shipping and other agricultural production capacities. Italy obviously sat with both, because Italy had both strong agricultural presence and industrial presence.
Yeah.
Europe, before the Eurozone formalization, sat literally with six very strong economies. And if you brought the English in, and you bring in the Dutch, and you bring in the Belgians, and you bring in the Danish, you just complement that particular scenario. Because obviously, the Czechs, the Slovaks, who's the other country? The Poles, they just came in later on. You had the Austrians also coming in later on. And then you also had obviously the 90s, which saw that, the Balkan War, breaking up the former Yugoslavia into all those smaller countries. And because those guys also was not in the EU, but they have like a special treatment discussion. Why I say special treatment is like they're not fully into the Euro picture, but they have certain privileges of accessing markets and trade in the euro zone. You take that scenario, and each country then had to realize, listen, you technically have to swear fealty to the economic planning coming through from Brussels, being transmitted by Paris and Berlin.
You.
So, at the heart of the AFC CFTA, and this is where I think, where I keep on saying, this is a double-edged sword. Namibia obviously stands to benefit a lot, but Namibia also stands the opportunity of potentially dominating, or in another sense, being dominated in direct trade. If Aliko Dangote comes and opens up his refinery here, Helmut,
yeah,
would Dangote respect environmental legislation in Africa? Aye, not in Africa, in Namibia. Namibia is, I think, the only country on the continent that puts the environmental management at the heart of the constitution.
Yeah.
At the heart of the constitution, we put environmental management.
How if you are going to open a door to any investor, foreign, or more like if you are going to give an opportunity to any investor, foreign or domestic, it obviously boils down to your to the respective authorities on how they provide oversight. Oversight over what laws, whether or not this said investor is following the laws that they should be following. Take for example, if someone from Botswana comes to invest in Namibia, I think any investor, foreign or domestic, if they are not, if the right oversight is not provided, they're gonna tremble over it. So I think it boils down to the oversight, if you ask me. When we're looking at the report coming out of the office of the attorney, the auditor general, one thing they pointed out, was that the office of the auditor general report. The Ministry of Environment? Agriculture.
The one about the SDG.
Minister of Agriculture. We're talking about saving the environment, but then they turn around and use insecticide or more like chemicals that are deadly to the environment, making the job of the Ministry of Environment and Tourism very difficult.
Yeah.
So again, you have one giant thorn there. And then we go to the Dowry's alleged illegal lithium mining, where a lot of pits were left. Commercial break.
Super bargains await you at USAID, where you pay for the product and not the brand. Pay only 26.99 Namibian dollars for 400 milliliter Dawn hand and body cream, 36.99 Namibian dollars for 1 kilo of Mama's washing powder, 750 milliliters Captain dishwashing liquid costs only 18.99 Namibian dollars at USAID, and large Sona bath soap just 12.99 Namibian dollars. USAID, we all save at USAID.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
You were still on agriculture.
I was still on agriculture. I'm looking at it from the angle of oversight for me, because, anyone is sort of like, this is not my favorite example, but it's the only one I have, so you're gonna listen to it whether I like it or not. Elvin and the Chipmunks.
Hi. What? How much?
Just listen, dude.
I'm
about to make an important point here using Elvin and the Chipmunks. Elvin and the Chipmunks, the first one.
How many are there?
I think there are four.
Do you know when is the last time I watched Alvin and the Chipmunks?
You are so behind.
In the 90s, that's where I watched Alvin and the Chipmunks. Guess where?
Where?
Holiday specials, even.
Seriously?
So once every 3 months, I could watch Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Elvin and the Chipmunks.
You're talking about the movies.
Okay. Yeah, Elvin and the Chipmunks. I think Dave, whose house they basically invaded. And
just say it's squatting.
He accommodated them because, his music career was going down the drain. Mm. It turns out they were, very good singers for Chipmunks. They felt like after they moved into Dave's house, they become, somewhat unruly, especially, the Elvin character is the naughtiest one. And the one who is breaking stuff out. So they come into this music producer, Uncle Ian, who sort of like try to exploit their their talent to his advantage. And then he was like, you know what? In my house, there will be no rules.
Mm.
All you just have to do is, leave Dave's house and come to my house, and you can do whatever you want. Now, as soon as they move in, the first question Elvin, the mischievous one, asks is, what are the rules around here? And Ian's answer is, there are no rules. In a split second, the house is in chaos.
Mm.
Because, well, everyone that has seen Elvin and the Chipmunks, the cartoon or the movie, knows that when you can't tell Elvin there are no rules,
mm.
the house is going to be in fire in less than an hour.
Mm.
So for me, obviously he had to come up with some rules. So when it comes to regulation for me, I think, a regulation is something that we must prioritize, even when it comes to trading amongst amongst each other. You know, you can't just let your regulatory guts down because the person that's coming to invest in your country is an African.
Mm.
No, just have your regulations up. It doesn't matter whether the investor is coming from China, Japan, Russia, Russia, the US, EU. It doesn't matter.
No.
Have laws in place that everyone, irrespective of where they're coming from, they must conform to.
Yeah.
Now, if you have all these laws on paper in very professional way, but you are not putting them into force, that's not the investor's problem. It's either the investor's problem. Actually, it's not an investor's problem because it's not an investor's problem because the investor is not in charge of enforcing those laws. It's your role as a government to enforce those laws on anyone to follow. Now, the Dowry's quote unquote illegal lithium mining example is an excellent one. Because there are environmental rehabilitation laws that we have in place.
Yeah.
That anyone that's involved in the extractive industry which is why the baseline survey of the oil industry runs from survey to rehabilitation.
Mm.
The rehabilitation part is the part that's supposed to indicate, you are basically
after
everything. Yeah. You don't just leave open pits everywhere for people's cattle to fall in.
Toxic pits and stuff everywhere, like that. Yeah. And chemical spills and everything.
Uh-huh.
You rehabilitate as you found it, you fix it.
What are a lot of companies, especially multinational, that have been involved into the extractive industry? What are they known for? Rehabilitation, these guys are terrible at it.
Yeah.
Because as soon as they finish, the natural resources are depleted, they pack their bags and head for the nearest exit.
Mm.
By the time that you realize that they left some chemicals that were unrehabilitated, they are somewhere else. And extraditing them is a whole different ballgame.
And then, at the heart of the discussion was obviously the miscommunication or the lack of communication. That was obviously the other haunting factor in that report, which is one of the other particular subject matter that also exists here. And this is what's actually a major concern, Helmut, because one of Namibia's first products that we obviously highlighted here on Eagle FM was the red meat exports to Ghana. End of 2023. Yeah. Or was it 22? Yeah, it was 23. End of 2023 to Ghana. The downside of that particular subject matter was, first and foremost, what Namibians don't know is that Namibian red meat producers work under strict market regulations. Regulations imposed on them from international partners, which are other markets,
mm-hmm.
and even local stakeholders. Local stakeholders impose this on local suppliers. Now, here's the thing, Helmut. You would obviously see in a scenario of market behavior based upon a scenario in terms of, okay, so what do I need to know? Which is back to your Elvin and Chipmunks reference.
Mm-hmm.
When Alvin asked the new guy that they were persuaded
moving into
where they were persuaded to move into with, what are the rules, was that guy made the mistake of saying there are no rules.
There are no rules.
Because he didn't know who Alvin was.
Uh-huh.
But let's, for example, say we are Namibians. We know we are both Namibian.
Mm-hmm.
So we set up certain particular rules which are even protected by law. Because if a trade dispute happens between us, we can go, we can approach a court, and a court will tell you, we need to find out what the aim of the dispute is. What is at the heart of the dispute?
What happened?
What happened?
How can we solve it, yeah.
And who did what? And then let's try to find new common ground, which is a positive as well as also a benefit and a very positive outcome. Or should there be any punitive measures being, you know, delivered to one of the two parties? From that scenario, Helmut, what we are literally explaining now to a listener is that if you're a business person, there is a fallback in terms of dispute resolution.
Yeah.
Now, what happens if a billionaire from another country comes to our shores? We don't know what his environmental management, his human development.
Easy. Just tell them, well, in this
track record. We don't know what it is back there.
Very easy to pick out.
Really? Mm-hmm. In Nigeria?
Mm-hmm. All you just have to do is go and ask the counterpart, you know, that side. And then they are like, no, this guy is squeaky clean. This guy, he wouldn't have had a fly.
Yeah.
That's when you're thinking with your bank account, not your mind. You know, these things happen in business. 10 minutes past the hour of 6. So, unfortunately, that brings us to the end of...
the home run.
Yeah.
For this Friday edition, guys, we'll be back on Monday. Don't worry.
We'll
obviously also be bringing you new subject matter for next week. So, stay tuned. Come back. Let's have an engagement. We won't promise you any competitions yet.
Yet. Yeah.
Yet.
Mm-hmm. Emphasis on the word yet.
On the word yet.
Yeah.
However, we do miss the interactions of the other day.
Mm-hmm. Ladies, let me just say, you shocketed me. Turns out
you should have also said, guys, I'm disappointed in you.
Seriously, guys. guys, when there's a competition that, that involves things of the kitchen, let's stay out of it.
Let's not embarrass ourselves.
Yeah, again. Because that was something else. Because, ladies, congratulations. Seriously, I mean, you knew what you're talking about. Most guys, the question was simple, guys.
No, Helmut Lee. No.
Y'all are lucky this is not 9:30.
No. Let's not do that, Helmut.
Okay, fine.
Don't want us beating up someone on Saturday and Sunday, please.
Sugar? Okay, until Monday.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Ipurane ngelo wapomboa eva tero urikoni maondo toto ingida ashike kapeno nwe utite okoye eku.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.